Salam, everyone, and welcome back to the third episode of season 2, or episode 10. In this episode, the discussion starts at around 18 minutes in, but I really do recommend listening to the context for this episode, even if it's a bit dense and a bit long, just to get the most out of the episode. We also reference the context quite a bit in our discussion, so that'll help with following along. All right, I'll just get into it. In this episode, we will be exploring jihad al-nafs, the struggle of the self. We'll delve into what it means to engage in jihad al-nafs, the various interpretations of what the self is, and how Mullah Sadra, a Persian Islamic philosopher that led the Iranian cultural renaissance in the 17th century, engages in self-actualization in the pursuit of governing their nafs. For the context, I mostly refer to the book Sculpting the Self, Islam, Selfhood, and Human Flourishing by Muhammad Farooq, and I drew a lot of inspiration from how he approaches the concept of the self, and I really do encourage everyone to read it. In part 2, Hala and I will talk about our own approaches to jihad al-nafs and how it has changed as we've gone older. As always, we are not scholars, we are just sharing our knowledge and experiences. Jihad al-nafs can be understood as the struggle to lead a more upright life, to govern yourself with the intention of pleasing God and as a consequence becoming closer to understanding God. Understanding what the struggle of the self might look like requires an exploration of the words jihad and nafs. Jihad is derived from the word jahada, which has several meanings such as to struggle, to make an effort, and to protect yourself and others. There are two categories scholars tend to refer to when explaining jihad, internal and external. Many people tend to use the term jihad al-akbar, the greater jihad, to describe an inward struggle of the self, while jihad al-asghar, the lesser jihad, is attributed to external jihad. Scholars use several hadiths and ayahs from the Quran to prove that jihad al-akbar is internal. For example, verse 69 in Surah Al-Ankabut is a particularly interesting point of discussion among scholars. The English translation goes as follows. As for those who struggle in our cause, we will surely guide them along our way, and Allah is certainly with the good doers. The significance of this ayah is highlighted in chapter 6 of the book 21st Century Jihad, Law, Society, and Military Action. Here, the author states that in this ayah, the grammatical variation of the term jihad is from the Meccan period, before there was a military connotation. Abu Suleiman al-Durrani, a popular Sufi figure, elaborates on this verse. Jihad in this verse is not fighting against the unbelievers, but rather support offered in the service of religion, refuting its detractors, restraining those who are oppressive, and its most significant facet is commanding the good and forbidding the evil. It also includes the spiritual struggle against the soul, and this is the greater jihad. It is worth noting a phrase that often comes up when searching about jihad al-akbar. Many research papers will mention that after returning from the Battle of Badr, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, stated, "We have returned from the lesser jihad to the greater jihad." When his companions asked the meaning of the greater jihad, the Prophet replied, "It is a struggle that one must make against one's carnal self." However, the authenticity of this hadith is questionable. When trying to determine the grading of the hadith, I found that the validity is a debate among scholars. So my intention with mentioning this hadith is if you happen to stumble across it yourself, to take it with a grain of salt. Regardless, as explored previously, there are many other scriptural explorations of internal jihad being jihad al-akbar. Either way, what can be said for certain is that spiritual struggle is a form of jihad. Defining the term nafs is a bit more difficult. In general, when doing Islamic-related research on the web, in English, it's a bit harder to obtain results for what you're looking for. This is always a limitation, but especially in this instance because academics, Islamic philosophers, and laymen tend to not use a consistent word for self. Nafs, ruh, and many other terms and languages I do not speak tend to use all these variations of the self interchangeably to speak about the self, soul, and or spirit. Oftentimes, papers will speak about the self in the way that we use I, but provide no further elaboration. Or they would switch between the self, soul, and spirit with no explanation as to why. For the purpose of following the contents of this episode, I decided that choosing an Islamic philosopher whose explanation of the self encompasses the complexity of the word, as well as the various forms the self might take, would be most suitable. Mullah Sadra, who has written copious amounts on this topic, does just that. When speaking about the nafs, he used the term in these contexts. The nafs is an immaterial entity. The nafs is a sacred substance. And the nafs is other than the body. There is some discussion about what exactly he might be referring to here, the soul, the self, or something else. However, either this distinction does not need to be made, or some others have said that the term soul might not be the best fitting. Regardless, as seen in the translated quotes, according to Sadra, the self can be described and explained from the atomic to psychosocial details, but that does not encompass the nafs in its entirety. There's not a determined form that the self takes. Rather, it is composed of various levels and dimensions. We also experience ourselves in a unique way that encompasses our thoughts, intentions, and values. Our being allows us to form judgments in a given socio-cultural space and initiate a process of personal growth. So in much less words, the self is a spectrum. Sadra really hones in on the multidimensionality of selfhood in the following quote. The human self does not have a known level when it comes to its identity, nor does it have a determined level in existence like other natural, psychic, and intellectual existence, for each of these has a known station. Rather, the human self has different levels and dimensions, and has both antecedent and subsequent modes of being, and in each station and world it takes a different form. However, it is very difficult to perceive and hard to comprehend both the nature of its reality and its identity. Many Islamic scholars retain this perception of the nafs being multidimensional and have created three primary levels of the nafs, basing their definitions of these varying levels in the Quran. An-nafs al-ammara, the desire ego, an-nafs al-lawama, the reproachful ego, and an-nafs al-mutma'inna, the serene tranquility ego. An-nafs al-ammara is the first and lowest level of the nafs. Provokes people towards evil temptation and corrupt desires. Scholars tend to use Ayah 53 of Surah Yusuf for this stage of the nafs. The English translation goes as follows. And I do not absolve my inner self of blame. Surely man's inner self often incites evil, unless my Lord shows mercy. Certainly my Lord is the most forgiving, very merciful. And nafs al-lawama begins to emerge when an individual strives to go against the evil commanding soul that obeys worldly desires, as described by Al-Ghazali. The struggle is towards spiritual purification of the mind, body, and heart, by attempting to resist worldly desires. This stage still encompasses wrongdoings, but there is emphasis on repentance as the person is striving towards spiritual purification. Scholars tend to refer to the second verse in Surat Al-Qiyamah. And I do swear by the self-reproaching soul. And nafs al-mutma'inna is when the nafs is in a state of tranquility. The person is able to moderate base human desires such as greed through the continuous remembrance of God. It's a complete submission before God. For this stage of the nafs, scholars refer to Surat al-Fajr, verse 27. Allah will say to the righteous, O tranquil soul. You may reach the highest level in nafs al-mutma'inna during a period in your life, and at another stage, you may regress to a nafs al-ammara. Your relationship with these various stages is not linear. Moving on, when it comes to governing the self and enacting jihad al-nafs, there are many angles that we could focus on, but the one I want to hone in on is self-purification, for several reasons, but I would like to think of this as the starting point. When one is thinking of what kind of person they aspire to be and how to achieve that, I believe the first step one should take is learning about themselves. And considering we have been operating on Sadra's definition of the self, I'm going to explore how Sadra engages in governing the self through self-purification. Before engaging in his work, it is relevant to note how Sadra approaches philosophy. He believes that philosophy is a set of spiritual exercises one does to perfect the human soul. In knowing the self, one is able to control and manage it. How he engages in philosophy is seen in his major work, The Transcendent Wisdom of the Four Journeys of the Intellect. In the Four Journeys, he urges self-purification in the pursuit of perfection to obtain divine grace and knowledge. We'll go through each of these journeys to see how one can govern themselves. My sources for this section is the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, the book that I referenced at the start of the episode, Sculpting the Self, and a paper titled Molla Sadra's Four Journeys as the Four Levels of Self-Consciousness by Hossein Zamaniha. Additionally intertwined with each of these journeys is my analysis as to what Sadra is implying here, because as philosophers do, sometimes it's difficult to extrapolate what they're saying to practical action. Before delving into each journey, there are two things I need to clarify. First is the term salik, which is seeker or a traveler. This term is used a lot throughout the four journeys and is a common term in Sufism. Seeker or traveler is used to describe someone who is on the path towards the goal of humility and submission. They must abide by the rules of Sharia and live their life as a way to see God. See here is used in a very similar sense to Ibn Arabi's unity of being, callback to episode 2. If you don't remember, it's okay. But I do recommend going back and listening to that episode, specifically around the 9th minute. But just remember the ayah Ibn Arabi draws on as proof for his theory. Ayah 115 in Surah Al-Baqarah. The translation goes as follows. Wherever you turn, there is the face of God. Everything exists as a result of God's command and is a manifestation of God, not to be interpreted as identical to God. To see God would be to acknowledge Him in every action that you do. This leads me to my second point. Sadra's four journeys tends to be explained in a way where he's using phrases such as seeing the absolute being or becoming the truth, God. You might remember similar phrases being used when we explored the unity of being in episode 2. While he might have meant it in the very literal sense, how we are interpreting these phrases is more in a metaphorical way. You can't ever see or become God because we can't even envision the extent of his greatness. What we can do, though, is attempt to manifest aspects of him through learning and applying Allah's divine names. Now we're equipped enough to delve into the journeys. The first journey is from the creature to the truth. The goal is the annihilation of the seeker in the truth. Here, the traveler is equipped with the foundational intellectual principles essential for comprehending philosophy. These include the fundamental definitions and explorations of philosophy and metaphysics. The purpose of this intellectual journey is to tear away the multiple layers an individual has that prevents them from engaging with the absolute being. There is not a clear number of layers, but Muslim mystics have acknowledged three important stages that must be passed before reaching the absolute being: your external characteristics, your essence, and your existence. I'm going to walk you through each of these. The first layer is the external characteristics unintentionally created in someone's lifetime as a response to functioning in society. You tear away these external characteristics or accidental characteristics to get to your essence. According to Sadra, the essence is a bundle of properties that define what you are. Think of it as an outline of who you are and are capable of becoming. So let's take a step back and think of a table. We know that a table must have four legs and a surface. This is the essence of a table. However, you can move around the room, observe it in a different light, and it might change shape and suddenly seem smaller or might seem darker. These are its accidental characteristics. The layer after the essence is your existence. For Sadra, existence is not something that can be fully grasped, and any attempts to conceptualize it is a false depiction. Think of it as the bare blocks of an individual. Once you pass all those layers, you reach the absolute being. The traveler will then be drowned in the beauty of God and his glory. Okay, I know that this can be a lot to take in, especially if it's your first time hearing this, so feel free to re-listen to this bit as many times as you would like. What I want to do now is try to provide some practical actions that one might take in order to embark on this first journey. While exploring metaphysics is definitely something you could do, and I encourage you to do, I wanted to list out some other actions Sadra mentions in order to engage in self-annihilation. First, you must mold yourself according to the Sharia and the prophetic example. So, how the Prophet, peace be upon him, lived his own life. Then, you should purify yourself through ethics and self-disciplinary activities. For example, not leaning to traits such as jealousy, anger, and so on. After that, you should only present virtuous qualities. Get rid of undesirable traits and adorn yourself through right knowledge, which could take shape as a study of metaphysics mentioned earlier. Finally, the self ends the first journey by annihilation of itself in the truth. That is the end of the first journey. I know that was a lot to take in, but it gets a bit easier from here. The second journey is the journey in the truth with the truth. Here, man must turn back to themselves with introspection and find himself explicitly as the subject of all actions and intentions. Sadhara argues that after a man finds his true self, he should realize all the attributes of perfection in himself until he becomes the full manifestation of truth. Here, one should turn to God's names and live out each of them to become a mirror, in which the attributes of the truth appear distinctly and clearly. The third journey is from the truth to the creature with the truth. This journey explains the God-world relationship, nature, time, and creation. For the traveler, this is the moment where they return from their journey within themselves to the realization of their duties in this current world. After they have made changes themselves, they are responsible for reforming society. That is why, after journeying from the creature to the absolute being and exploring the attributes of the truth and the realization of these attributes in himself, the traveler should turn back to other creatures and try to fulfill the attributes of the truth in society. The final journey is from the creature to the creature with the truth. In this journey, the shell of his illusory self, based on the accidental characteristics, is torn apart. Now you turn your attention to the outer world and contemplate your relations between other creatures while beholding what the prophets brought. A man knows himself through the relationship with the world and other human beings. The difference between the illusory self and now this reformed self is the awareness. These are not traits created unintentionally as a result of being negligent towards your surroundings, but rather due to intentional action with others who have also manifested characteristics of the truth within them. We started this journey by looking inward and moving outward beyond ourselves into our surroundings. This is what drew me in particular to Mulla Sadhra's perspective on self-purification. We often see a lot of religious advice centering the individual's improvement with very little regard to their community, which is antithetical to Islam's collectivist nature. However, in Sadhra's four journeys, it's an even split of individual reformation and change that can only be done through interactions with others. Hopefully, in this context, there is something you can hold on to that has changed your own approach when engaging in jihad an-nafs. There are many other perspectives that we haven't even touched on, so I encourage you to do some reading of your own and see what sticks for you. Now we will get into the discussion.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Back from Fej. Today is the 10th episode, or Season 2, Episode 3, and we'll be talking about jihad an-nafs, as Ella said in the context, and just some ways that we go about it and how we think about it in our daily life. So we'll just take turns discussing the questions we prepared, and yeah.
Okay, so before we get into the questions, and this is also still technically a question, Helen and I were talking about how we should explain or talk about what jihad an-nafs is to us, like when we're using the term jihad an-nafs, what definition are we operating on? Because in the context, we use the words of other people, which is still good. And also, we'll probably end up having similar definitions. But I think it's good to get that defined first.
Okay.
So, Hannah, what is jihad an-nafs?
To me, it's a very, basic definition. And it just basically entails what the term actually means. So, jihad an-nafs is, the struggle with the self. And to expand on that, it's, the struggle with my quote-unquote lower or base parts of my mind that sometimes want temporary enjoyment that isn't necessarily the best for me or isn't necessarily what I should be doing and so on. It's related to self-discipline and directing that part of myself to a path that will be the best for me in the future. So it's ignoring anything that gives me instant gratitude, instant gratification, and just focusing on, obviously as we should as Muslims, focusing on the akhirah and what's best for that. And even in the dunya, focusing on things that would give me gratification later, delayed gratification. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I view it similarly. And I realize that when thinking about jihad an-nafs, I kind of split it into two parts, but it's mostly like present tense. So what I would probably encounter on a day to day. And then there's the long term version of jihads and nafs. It all encompasses the same thing. It all falls under the same umbrella. But my mind just splits it that way.
I mean,
but yeah.
Yeah, it's fair. No, keep going.
So the daily one is sort of similar to what you were saying, where I'm just thinking of, I mean, Islam gives us a moral compass. So you sort of, on your day-to-day, your average day, you kind of have a rough idea of what you should be doing and shouldn't be doing. Like, you know when you're about to do something or thinking about something or having, because not all desires are bad, but like leaning into something that you should avoid.
Yes.
That, for me, is like the daily jihad and nafs. And then the long term, I more so split it into my goals or what I aspire my future self to strive for, I guess. And that one is more holistic, I think. It's more like, it's less thinking about base desires, even though not base desires, like avoiding those your baseline nefs, I guess. And then, so even though that's there in the background, it's more so thinking like, what can I do, or how do I create the self that is actively thinking about God and respecting my relationships with other people with God in mind? So that it all actually falls under the same thing, but I just categorize it into.
Yeah, I was just thinking about what you were saying and how it's like you sort of split it in two ways, like jihad and nafs as a way to maintain yourself. And jihad and nafs as a way to achieve the highest version of yourself. Like jihad and nafs daily, as in like the current version of yourself that is still supposed to struggle with things that are hard. Like for example, praying. Even though you've built the habit of praying, it still requires jihad and nafs to pray on time every day, wake up for fajr, and so on. And then jihad an-nafs to actually like force yourself to implement new things that would ultimately make you achieve like the highest version of yourself. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And I guess that kind of leads into the second question. When Hal and I were thinking about the structure for the discussion, we sort of based it around this question, or we started off with this question, which is, how do you start thinking about the person you want to be?
Okay, fine, I can go first. I mean, for this question, I have an answer only because I've been thinking about it a lot recently. Like, this episode is basically like post New Year's resolutions. And so in that, like following that mood of like goal setting and so on, you're obviously like in that mindset and trying to, I mean, for me, I don't really get affected by New Year's like resolutions. It's more so because it's my actual birthday that I don't feel it because of New Year's. It's because I'm older now that now I have to think about, oh, what am I going to do this year that is going to be different? It just so happens to be on New Year's. So anyways, the way I think about it so that I don't get bored is basically, it's kind of weird, but I like to like take an observer point of view and then imagine myself in a video game, like The Sims.
Me too. Me too.
That's crazy.
You know, there's this guy who made an application. It's similar to Notion, but it's all video game based. So you can level up and get skills and all of that.
An application like that. I was literally going to develop one. I'm not even kidding. I swear to God. That's crazy.
I'll send it to you after.
That's crazy. We should make one. Muslim version.
Wait.
Coming soon. Actually, not soon at all, but.
Definitely not soon. Don't trust us in time, bro.
Soon as in the Arab soon, to be honest.
So,
but anyway, as I was saying, it's like, for example, you're a character in Sims. And when I don't actually know, sometimes like your goals or like your conception of what you would like to be or how you would like to be isn't like available to you in your conscious mind. So when I just think about not me, but just some other character and how I would like to customize them in any way, I think the end result, I take the end result and because it like represents what I actually gravitate towards in terms of like characteristics, properties, goals, and so on. I think that's just like a good exercise, like separating your actual self, how you are, in terms of like, oh, I'm bad at this, I need to be better and this, blah, blah, blah. And just like seeing like if you had a blank canvas, what would you do with it? And I feel like that, I don't know, that just helps me a lot more than just reflecting on past actions and then trying to, you know, find a way out from there.
Yeah, I approach it similarly. But I guess from the start, because what you were saying about New Year's resolutions, I don't really do them. But what I do is it's kind of similar to you, except it's not my birthday. It just happens to fall in the middle of the year. In the middle of the year is New Year's. But for me, in my when I think, okay,
you graduated.
Stop, I know.
both graduated, by the way. From last episode until this episode, we graduated.
And we're working. What was I saying? Yeah, I still operate. My perception of time is heavily based on the academic calendar. So 3 times in the academic calendar, I look at my goals, which is basically this customizable version of myself that I'm like this person, this version of myself that I'm trying to customize and trying to reach. And when I do it, it usually is beginning of summer, beginning of fall, and mid-December. So, or not mid-December, end of December. And yeah, how I start doing it and how I approach it is really similar. I start thinking about the traits I admire in others and that I'd want to see in myself. I also look back at how, or sort of what I struggled with, you know, since the last time I did a check-in with myself, and try to see why I didn't end up working, or whatever I was trying to achieve, why couldn't I achieve it? Not necessarily in a self-blame way. It's just, obviously, I want what's best for myself. And if during those 4-3 months, I wasn't able to, you know, work towards it or improve it, I have to go back to the drawing board. And I then end up splitting everything into, this is so like video game, but I end up splitting everything into main quests and side quests. And my main quest gets split into multiple checkpoints that I split across like a few months. And also when I'm starting that reflection process, I always think like I should want more for myself, but I shouldn't be dismissive of this past version of myself who was also trying really hard. So it's kind of during those reflection points, those points in the year, it's always a wrestling process between those two feelings of wanting more and also being content.
I mean, so yeah, like yeah. Honestly, I really get that. And I like, there's nothing wrong with like setting it up as a game, because like you connote games with something that is enjoyable. And so mm-hmm. Obviously if you need something to motivate you, especially like amidst, you know, academic stress and so on, that's really good. Because I feel like for me during the academic year, I sort of like whenever I do these quote unquote goals, as you said, it's like you sort of aim too high and you don't like take into account the conditions you're actually in. Like you plan under perfect conditions, but you don't plan under academic stress and having to take care of yourself and like, you know, and so on.
Just daily life things that come up too, like out of your control.
Exactly. So yeah, like I don't know why this year was kind of different for me. Like while everyone was like quote unquote goal setting, I was just like focusing on like I didn't want to call them goals, because I was reflecting like on the past and how like I would be so motivated to like, this is gonna sound bad, but I would like be so like not excited, but you know, like I would feel hasty to dismiss the current version of myself in the hopes of getting to something better. But now it's more like, it's better in the sense that I'm like accepting of where I am. Like life doesn't have to be a race. And also because you know that, like doing the video game exercise that I talked about earlier, that's what sort of helped me actually plan goals without like demeaning like the current state of yourself or whatever, like not being harsh on yourself, because like you can quantitatively see how far you are from that actual goal. Like it's more of like a science experiment rather than, you know, beating yourself up vibes.
Yeah. Adding on to what you're saying, or not even adding on, just agreeing with you.
Piggybacking.
By splitting it up into very achievable and they almost become like super minuscule just because that's the only way I can approach it. I feel that I'm more able to see that these small little steps that I'm taking every day or these small little tasks that I'm doing is helping the current me now become who I want to be, while also seeing those small tasks reflected in my current self. It helps me be more present with my current self.
And it's actually crazy that you said that, because that's a perfect segue into what we wanted to talk about next, which was like, when you're goal setting, we're kind of mixing two questions, but like when you're goal setting, how not to set yourself up for failure and like know what is an appropriate amount to like what is an appropriate goal to set. This is sort of getting into like Atomic Habits vibes, like the book. I haven't read much of it actually, but like most of what's in it, like we literally learn in cognitive science anyways, so cheat code. But anyways, I was just going to say the exact same thing that Alette said, was like making, for example, if you have a progress bar, okay, that's you at the start and then your goal at the end. What I do is literally just like, you know that quest that's so annoying that you have to like wait to actually keep achieving it? Well, that's how I treat
it.
You have to grind. Yeah, like you have to like...
yeah.
You have to like do a small part and then actually just wait. Like you're just waiting. So if the time is going to pass anyway, I just like make a really small, like almost stupid goal. Like for example, if you want to read a book, okay? I'll literally like, if I really hate this book so much, I'll just say, okay, you're reading half a page today. That's literally going to take you 2 seconds. And then I do that.
Metamorphosis?
I gave up on that. I meant the trial. But anyways...
try
it's like Warcraft, okay guys. Anyways, I don't really like Kafka. Anyways,
this is a Kafka hate account.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about him. Listen, anyway, that's not the point.
Actually, you do know how you feel about him. You just don't want to.
I haven't read enough of his work. Like I haven't read enough of his
I've
work.
Read
and I really
enough.
I really like his diary entries too.
Okay, his diary entries. Anyways. Not his actual literature, but anyways, the idea of like improving 1% like every single day, and it's something really small, like you're obviously not going to finish that book in a day, but because you're not thinking about it, at the end of the month, you'll be like, oh, like I actually finished that book and it wasn't that bad anyway. And throughout the month, like because you've built like that habit of, you know, like today at 3 p.m., in my 5-minute break, I'm going to read half a page or a page, whatever. Because you've built that habit, in that time, you can literally just keep increasing it, like throughout the month, or like by accident, you would like have read 2 pages and stuff like that. I feel like for me, like that's like the most efficient and like the best way to actually start a habit, because I, like as a perfectionist, or I don't know, I don't know if I'm a former perfectionist, but
a recovering perfectionist.
Recovering perfectionist. Eldest daughter. Anyways. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's just like the best way to get started with anything that you want to achieve, is to actually just forget about it. Because if you stress about your progress and how much more you have until the finish line, from my experience, that just puts me off straight away. And I just don't. I end up doing zero instead of one. And I'd always rather take the one. Anyways.
Yeah.
What about you?
I like that framing because especially if you're trying to make changes to your sense of self or how you perceive yourself or any of those almost major goals, you are setting yourself up for failure when you think that you'll be able to see that change quickly, because it never happens quickly, or at least especially if it's I lost my train of thought.
I feel like what you're trying to say is like no amount of effort that you put in right now will help you, like, for example, jump to 20%. So you might as well just do it consistently from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But also what I wanted to say is what I started doing for myself. So after one of those big three midpoints in the year where I think about the goals that I've set and the goals I want to set, I started doing these weekly and monthly check-ins. So at the end of every week in the month, I look at the minor goals that I've set for myself that I've broken apart from my main goals. And I see, okay, within this week, what did I do and what couldn't I do, or what did I keep putting off? And let me see, like, maybe I need to go completely back to the drawing board if it's been, for example, 3 weeks of me just moving that task to the next week with not really touching upon it or just avoiding it entirely. So either maybe I gave myself a bigger goal than I thought it was,
mm-hmm.
and I need to rethink about it. Or maybe there is actually another reason why I keep putting it off, and I need to think why, like, what is this reason why I'm putting it off? Because putting it back to the drawing board and not addressing that core reason, I'm seriously not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
So that's sort of what I've done to try to make it more attainable, these goals or these quests that I've set up for myself. But yeah, I sort of moved away from a daily check-in. Like, I'll try to set in daily habits,
mm-hmm.
in a similar way that you just said, but I moved away from a daily check-in because there are just some days where you wake up and it's just not that great of a day. And I try my best. I'm trying so hard to get done this habit that I've set, or this, like, such a minor goal that I've set for myself, and it's just not happening. And I end up feeling worse about the entire thing. And I would just disregard my previous progress. I'm like, oh, no day of work sets me back, even though that's not even true. But, you know, sometimes you just you start being hard on yourself for no reason. But when I think of the general week goal, hopefully there are days in the week where I was able to do one thing here and there. And if not, there's been enough space between myself and this person who's also me on a Tuesday and this person on me on a Saturday. There's been enough space between her where I'm able to at least kind of look back at that day and think, okay, was it just a day where I was tired, or was there something else? And if I was just tired, then whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, looking at the general trend is way more productive. Like, I also used to do that, like, worry about perfect streaks. But for example, if the week ends up with me having like 60% or 70% of what I wanted achieved, then that's a pass. Like, but in terms of like setting yourself up for failure, I also wanted to talk about how to deal with the fact, like, how to deal with setting multiple goals at once and like trying to achieve multiple goals at once. Because obviously when you're doing that exercise of reflecting on yourself or like building your ideal game character, you have different categories like spiritual, personal, physical, creative, and obviously you can improve. There's always room for improvement in every single one of those categories. And if you want to target more than one, sometimes it's very, very easy to get overwhelmed. Obviously, like, because you can't, I mean, psychologically, it's hard to focus on multiple things at once or like switch between them and make progress, like consistent progress between them. So yeah, with this situation, I feel like the thing I like that we just talked about, which is just like averaging the progress, like weekly progress or even monthly progress, just calculating it as a percentage, and as long as it's most of the time. So for example, as long as you're doing more than 50% of the time, especially because like it takes like 21 days to actually form a habit. So as long as the general trend is like going up, then you know that you're like on the right track or doing something right. But as Adette said, if not, then it's not actually like your fault specifically, or like you need to reflect and see why it's not working, because the way that you're approaching it might not be the most efficient way for you to achieve a goal. We can go back to that reading example that I said. For example, one of your goals might be, oh, I want to read every day. And the way that you're going to achieve this, or sorry, I want to have read one book or two books a month. And the way that you're setting this is every night before I sleep, I'm going to get in bed and I'm going to read for half an hour or an hour. Okay, but then because like it's you haven't read in such a long time and you have to keep your focus and try not to go on your phone for like 30 minutes or an hour, it might be hard and you might not stick to it every single day. And at the end of the month, because you've missed so many days, you might not have reached that goal. But if you set it as something that's very like simple, that takes like 2 minutes, in your break, I'm just going to read half a page, you'll find that you've achieved that goal and you haven't even thought about it. So just compartmentalizing the steps to your goals. I feel like that's the best way to not set up yourself for failure. Thoughts?
Real?
Hashtag real.
Going off what you were saying about not being able to complete a goal and not taking that as a self-blame moment. Okay, this is so...
What?
Whatever, but take. I think, okay, I saw, no, it's not a hot take.
Okay, I
saw this tweet, and it's not even that relevant, the context of it, but it was just a girl who posted her journal, and then she posted her new journal, and then someone had responded or whatever. It was a whole discourse, I actually don't even, whatever. What that tweet was saying was, oh, I actually stopped journaling. But not for any reason. I just realized I'm not a journaling person. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that just stuck with me.
Yeah.
And I've just applied it to my current habits. Because I'm like, maybe I'm trying something for myself. And this just isn't for me. And and that's sort of my relationship with journaling too. Because sometimes I'm like, okay, at least I'm going to try. Always one of my goals was just to journal more consistently. But then when I saw that tweet, I was like, okay, I'm just going to give it one more go and see if I'm actually just not a journaling person. Maybe it's just not for me, or maybe it's just not for me at the rate that I want it to be. Like maybe it just should just be an on and off thing rather than a consistent thing. I wrote that goal in mind thinking, okay, just see, and maybe you're not, but at least give it a go before shutting yourself down, because maybe you actually are, but you're just, you're not giving it a proper go. Give it a proper go, and if you end up by the end, if you realize by the end of it that maybe it's just not, that's just not for you, okay, that's fine. At least I realized I'm not a journaling person. So that's kind of the attitude I've been taking with these other goals I've set. I'm like, okay, maybe I'm just not this kind of person, but let me at least give it a fair shot.
Mm-hmm. And results?
Well, it's only been a month since I started thinking okay. That. And I actually, okay, but actually, what was weird was, okay, so I started doing it every 2 weeks. And so mid-January, I was like, that was technically my first time journaling in 2024. I was like, okay, whatever. I just started writing. And at first I was dreading it. The entire day I was literally dreading picking up this pen and writing on my journal. And then I started writing and I literally would not stop yapping. Okay, I was like, okay, wait, that's not that bad. And then 2 days into after that journal process, I was like, wait, I really want to pick up my journal again. But I actually pushed it another, I didn't end up picking it up. I don't know why, I should have, but I just didn't end up picking it up until my next 2 week mark. And I was like, okay, no, I was really looking forward to it. So I think we're moving that expectation of like no, I'm really going to do it. And me just trying to figure out if this is actually something I like or not really helped.
Yeah.
But then again, it's only been a month.
No. Because I've also like not applied the same mentality, but it's sort of like on the same vein, which is more like, how useful is this habit actually to me? Like how, okay, like, am I just going to journal and like, just like say like what I did today, like sort of like a memory, like recount, or am I actually gonna, like, is it most useful to me when I'm actually like thinking about something and I like need all, like, you know how you have like short term, like in your working memory, there's not much things that you can keep track of. So like on paper, it can help you keep track of more things. So using it as sort of like an extension to your problem solving. And I found that actually, like, rather than just thinking about something for so long, I would rather actually just write down, like, it helps me not overthink when I'm stuck on something, because you keep forgetting the facts, or like forgetting like, oh, actually, like, this is what I want to do, or this is how I wanted to go about it. So if you just write down like every single thing that you not are overthinking about, but like, you know, your thought process in general, you can easily just spot the point that's making you like iffy, or the point that's causing the cycle. So it's just like, as a tool of like getting you out of a funk or like an overthinking thingy, it's, for me, it's more of like a problem solving tool, because like you can like lay it out straight and you can actually see what you've written. But as a daily thing, I feel like, I don't know, like for me, you as well, probably, like, I'm just generally a reflective person. Like in the moment, like something happened, I'm just going to reflect about it and see like what I think. I don't need a journal to get that out of me. But when it's just too much to keep track of in my brain, that's when I need to go back to paper. And then I can actually, it's actually also useful. You know why? Because you can go back to certain days and see how you've thought, and then see like,
yeah,
if there's been an improvement in thought. It's sort of like, again, a science experiment. Like you're viewing your progress in real time. Like, this is what I used to think, and then this is how I actually think now, and like see the differences. So it's kind of like preserving yourself, I guess, in written form, which is kind of dangerous. I mean, it, not dangerous, but it makes me feel like, oh my God, like, what if someone reads this? So it's like hidden under. I hope my sister doesn't listen to this.
Anyways, sort of what you were saying in the beginning about, I mean, we're just using journaling as an example, but
yeah,
seeing whether something is benefiting for you or not, or how it can benefit you, that sort of thinking helped me work with myself better. Like, I'm not trying to work against myself. I'm not trying to force this person to become something or
that girl,
someone. Yeah, like, I'm working with myself, not against her. So, yeah.
Fair enough. So now we're moving on to a question that's more heavily, like, related, like, specifically related to Jihad an-Nafs, and, like, why we have to do Jihad an-Nafs in the first place, which is just that, like, as Muslims, or, like, being the quote-unquote ideal Muslim, go back to episode 2.
By the way, there are so many callbacks to episode 2 in this episode. Even in the context, I'm like, Ibn Arabi, unity of being.
I mean, it's pretty related.
Yeah.
Like,
it's linked,
not,
yeah.
It's ideal. Not like that crazy, you know?
Okay, you don't have to burst my bubble. It's just, you know, like, there's cohesiveness to this part. Anyway,
I mean, we did plan it. Okay, it is crazy. Anyways, so the question is, like, how do we make following the prophetic example, or like the Rasul's footsteps, how do we make following that more attainable? And like, how would we use Jihad an-Nafs, applying it to like spiritual goals? Like, when we were talking about delayed gratification in the beginning, we mostly talked about like how you won't see your, like, the fruits of your goals manifest straight away, regardless So you have to wait for them. But now we're talking about something that's very far away, which is like your akhirah, your day of like the hereafter. So just like methods in dealing with that and how you won't see anything tangible come from it in this life at all. Do you want to start at that?
When we were talking about the questions, the prophetic example, like how to make, you know, following the prophetic example more attainable, I don't know why, but it just stumped me because I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It just stumped me because in general, I don't know if this is bad to say, I don't know, but it feels really far away from me that I don't know, that it feels sometimes overwhelming, or sometimes I think, oh, okay, because I'm not even remotely close. It makes me think, oh, maybe I'm not that good of a Muslim. So,
okay. So now we're going to do an actual exercise to help you get out of this mindset. Because like we need to like reframe it, because you actually won't ever reach the prophetic example. Call back to episode 2. You won't ever become the ideal Muslim. You will always be striving until the day you die. And like your jihad and nafs will continue until the day you die. But what we're talking about is more of like, how do I, again, in video game terms, for me, it's like, you know, in Mario, I think I used this exact same example in episode 2, but it's just like something that I actually do go by. Like in Mario, when you like hit the blocks and you gain coins, and then sometimes there's this block that you hit it as many times as you can and just multiplies the coins. So that's how I think of like good deeds and like sunnahs and stuff. Like I'm just trying to bank as much as possible. Like I know I'm not a prophet. I know I'm not like one of those people that like does like so many, like I know I'm not like there where I want to be or what I see as the ideal. But the thing that I can do as Hada, the thing that I can do is just bank up on coins. And at the end, if I have a substantial amount of coins, it's a pass. So like that's my mindset anyway, when like approaching it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's more of like when I feel like a disconnect, well, like not a disconnect, but like when I feel like I'm praying, but like with not that much khushu'. I feel like, oh, mm-hmm. like my day probably isn't really centered around religion. And so that's when you start doing like sunnahs, which is like following like sunnahs as in like what the prophet did, like just some small things that could help you like just be in a constant remembrance of God. So like reading like half a page a day of Quran, something like that, or like doing dhikr after prayer, or like doing the sunnah of like one of the prayers, like again, like starting really, really small. Like, okay, I'm just gonna do, like when I'm praying Fajr, I'm just gonna do the sunnah after Fajr. And that's it. Like, it's just two. It's really easy. And if you convince yourself that it's so easy, that like, bro, it's so easy, you might as well just do it. Mm-hmm. That's my mindset. I feel like after some time, you'll sort of feel like you're reaping the benefits, even if you can't see them in that instance. And if I don't feel like it, like if I still feel like something's missing, then I'll also have to take more extreme measures. Not extreme, but like, you know, just up the ante and just say, oh, okay, so I'm going to do more sunnahs, or I'm going to read more, or, you know, and so on. It's just about, again, like starting small and then building on it. I just apply mm-hmm. that same exact method to this.
Yeah. I mean, as you were talking and also continuing my thought process, I think that the main thing that I center myself around, like in terms of jihad and nafs, you know, following the prophetic example, all of that is really just all based on this main quest or this main theory of being more time and God conscious. But specifically the time aspect, it stems from that line of thought where we're supposed to be really conscious of how our time is spent and, you know, making sure it's done for God and all that. But because I don't know what people usually are thinking of when they say that, but for me, because I have a really loose perception of time, like even in my daily life, like the day to day, sometimes it could be 3 p.m. I don't really know where my time has gone or where it's been spent. What I do, and I guess I am following the prophetic example, but I don't know, I'm almost like not consciously thinking of that, or I'm just thinking, okay, because my goal is to be more time conscious with the end result of being more God conscious. These are all the hours in the day, and these are the various like Islamic related activities, or I guess activities is a word.
Checkpoints.
Okay. That I can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that I can do. So, but I very, not strictly, but I'll have like an hour to hour schedule, which kind of I don't always strictly follow because sometimes things just happen in the day and you can't control it. But if I put in my hour to hour schedule, so I can see how my time is being spent, and I'll also see like, okay, at this point, I'm supposed to do so-and-so like Islamic activity, like read Quran or do something like that. Doing that activity plus also being very, very conscious of my time and how it's spent is sort of what makes me feel not necessarily like the prophetic example is attainable, but that I'm at least working towards something. And if I feel at ease after doing it, I count that as like what you were saying with the Mario Kart points. I count that as a point. I'm like, okay, that counted. But yeah, I don't really know if that actually even answered the question, but that's just, I think perception of time is very linked to my relationship with Islam.
I mean, as it should be, I feel like, because obviously it's a finite thing for us, like, and we don't know when the end, like everyone's end is. Obviously you can like pass away at any moment. So you not like have to be doing like, you don't have to be like perfect, but you always have to like keep in mind that you should be like almost renew your attentions in the way that you were doing it with like, oh, being conscious of your time. Mm-hmm. As long as your intention for whatever you're doing, even like, oh, like I'm going to go shower because I want to present myself as a clean Muslim or whatever, or like follow the hygiene of the Prophet, stuff like that. Just having that just gives you like bonus points for no reason, like for things that you're already doing, just setting your intention to be that this is for God, or I want to study because I want to represent more Muslim people in the academic sphere or where whichever field that I'm going to be in, and so on. I just feel like that's also really helpful to add on to what you were saying. And I mean, this is also linked to the next point that we wanted to talk about, but in terms of like spiritual goals, I feel like a really big part of it is the community.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in helping you achieve it, but like also in continuing the circle of knowledge or like actions. And like for me, that's just like, I feel way more motivated if I'm doing, for example, praying jama'ah or like volunteering, whatever I'm doing, if I'm doing it with other people and like they're just as excited as I am or like pulling me up and they're taking more initiative than me, that wants me to also go up and match them. And it creates a positive loop back into the community because obviously the community is also being benefited. And like, so I just feel like that's an important part. But yeah, to help achieve your personal goals, I feel like surrounding yourself with the correct people, like obviously as the Prophet said, like your friends define the type of person that you will be. And if you're surrounded by suhba saliha or like internally good people, then you'll start to mirror them and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why we ended up going for Mulla Sadra's 4 journeys, because I sort of touch on this briefly at the end of the context, but the 4 journeys are almost split evenly, one into the first two into and is focused on individual reformation. And the second is making sure everyone in your community is also manifesting traits of God within themselves. The way he phrases it isn't like this individual who has gone on their journey is now at this leadership level, but more so how he phrases it is this individual is also still incomplete. He's not coming here as a mentor or necessarily as a teacher, but his self is incomplete because his self is an extension, or half of his self almost rests with the rest of the community, or at least that's how I interpreted it. I didn't really interpret as, oh, I've gone on this self-ascension and now I'm coming back and I'm going to teach you what I know. which is what I really like. And I think as Muslims, I think it's really, really important for us to consistently remember our Muslim community when doing acts of worship, because like especially now, because we live in a capitalistic society that centers the individual, you're thinking of how can you be the most productive, and this also bleeds into your worship even without you realizing it's it's difficult to separate the two, and you have to be for me personally, I have to make a really conscious effort that I'm not trying to be productive right now. I'm not trying to finish this in the shortest amount of time because I'm running out of time. Like that's not me fulfilling my actual Islamic obligation and my Islamic duty. And I think also because we're obviously exposed to all these thoughts and opinions online where they're focusing on the individual and the reformation of the individual, people do that unintentionally when trying to improve their self, but with Islam as the center, like thinking, what Islamic related activity can I do? I'm just using activity, but I hope you guys know what I mean. What Islamic related task can I do just to improve myself? It obviously is necessary. Like, I think you still need to do that, but I think there needs to be more of a, or not needs to, but I think what's also important is being super conscious of your community, not necessarily with the thought process, or not always with the thought process of how will this benefit me, or how will these people benefit me and my akhirah, like my the end of life for me. I think it's still important. I just don't think it should always be the forefront. So a lot of my goals or my life goals sort of are explicitly centered in the Muslim community, not for any reason other than I'm really trying to view other people, my Muslim community, as an extension of myself. And there's no way I can ever be a really great Muslim or anything if I'm not thinking and centering the community in my actions. So yeah, obviously it's difficult. We have to counter this individualistic thought that has no basis in Islam.
I mean, it's difficult when you think you've surrounded yourself with like-minded people, but then they actually end up not being committed to the same goal as you. And then that's when you just reevaluate and find better people that you want to nurture a community with, you know? So obviously it's like we know that Islam is like based on brotherhood and like wanting for your like sister or brother in Islam the best for them, wanting for them. Sorry, I only know this in Arabic, so I can't
just say in Arabic, but I know what you're saying.
Wanting for them like yourself, like wanting. Anyways, just translation bug right now. Anyways, so yeah, like. For me, when there's that like mismatch in values, because I obviously like you obviously have different types of friendships, right? And like there are certain friendships that are more valuable, and for me, they're more valuable in the sense that like you feel a deeper emotional connection, and you actually feel like, wow, like this is really like my sister in Islam, and like she really like I really admire her, and I feel at ease, and I hope to see her in Jannah, inshallah. Feeling that sort of level with someone, you're obviously not going to feel that with everyone, but just trying, just the act of trying to nurture that, which is like what you've done as well, you're obviously benefiting from it, and you're benefiting other people, and I don't know, just like having some sort of impact on someone, even if like they aren't receptive to it straight away, Like maybe in the future they'll reflect and like see that, oh, like maybe you are right or something. But just the act of trying, I guess that's the gist of this episode. Always try, even if, like, always try regardless is just my actual motto for this year. Just try regardless, and whatever happens, it's God's plan anyway. I'm just going to deal with it.
Yeah. But you have to at least try.
Yep. I feel like we've covered, like, a lot.
Yeah.
It's good for a comeback. Okay, so we hope you enjoyed this long-awaited episode. And inshallah,
it was literally like a
we haven't posted like
it was
a
literally
year.
Like a journal. No, we posted in August,
okay,
I think, or July.
Okay. Anyways,
this was literally like a journal entry, like this.
I mean, that's what it should be.
This episode,
it's back from
Fetch. No, I agree.
Okay.
No, we're on brand. But I hope that even if there's nothing that could be personally gained from the discussion, at least it was enjoyable, or almost you could see yourselves and us. So
I agree. Anyways,
yeah,
bye
bye.